Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 68, a chapter is entitled The Marriage of Sambha. Today we're covering texts 25 and 26. Okay, so maybe I'll just, 25 has no purport, and 26 does, so I'll just chant 25 and then you can follow along with me, and then we'll do 26 responsively. Ete yonena sambada sahasasya sanasana vishnayastu yatam nita ashmadatta nipashana. It is because these Vishnis are bound to us by marital ties that we have granted them equality, allowing them to share our beds, seats, and meals. Indeed, it is we who have given them their royal thrones. So 26, we can do this responsively. Shamara vyajane sakam atapatram chapunduram ritam ashanam shayam bunjate smad upekshaya shamara vyajane sakam atapatram chapanduram kiritam ashanam shayam punjate smad upekshaya shamara vyajane shankam atapatram chapanduram kiritam ashanam shayam punjate smad upekshaya. Please chant. Vaishnavis. Shamara vyajane shankam. Atapatram chapanduram. Kiritam ashanam shayam. Punjate smad upekshaya. Thank you. Chamara of Yaktil here. Yajane, pair of fans. Shamkam, Kancho, Atapatram, umbrella. Cha, and Pandaram, white. Kiritam, crown. Ashanam, throne. Shayam, royal bed. Bunjite, they enjoy. Asmat, by R. Upekshaya, overlooking. Translation. Only because we looked the other way could they enjoy the pair of yak tail fans in the conch shell, white umbrella, throne, and royal bed. Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes that the Kurus were thinking, they, the Yadus, should not have used such royal paraphernalia in our presence. But we did not check them due to our family relationships. By using the words Ajmad Upekshaya, the Kurus mean to say they were able to use these royal insignia because we did not take the matter seriously. As explained by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the Kurus thought showing concern about their use of these items would have been a sign of respect. But in fact, we do not have such respect for them. Since they are of inferior families, they are not to be respected, and so we pay no regard to them. Om Ganantimarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unitam Gena Taishmai Shri Gurudev Namaha. We can approach Bhagavatam on two different levels, from the standpoint of Leela and also from the standpoint of what lessons can be learned from a particular pastime. So from the standpoint of Leela, it's quite a unique scenario that's unfolded here. Samba, you know, has kidnapped Lakshmana from his Swayamvara, and it appears that the Kurus are really upset that he's done this, and so they want to teach him a lesson. She didn't want him as a husband, is another factor, so they go after him. They're really upset. So they go after him. They're outnumbered. He's outnumbered 6 Maharatis to 1. And this includes Bhishma Dev. So they capture him. And they take him back into Hastinapur. And then Narada Muni, as the transcendental catalyst, informs the Yadavas of what's taken place, of how the Samba was unfairly dealt with. They didn't observe the standard of Kshatriyas, of a fair fight. They outnumbered him. And so Balaram, you know, the Yadavas, they're putting their armor on, they're ready to go and fight with the Kurus. And Balaram feels responsibility to try and avert this fighting, you know, within, amongst basically friends and family. So he takes it upon himself to go there and straighten things out. He sends Uddhava to, you know, first to feel out Dhritarashtra's mood And Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana are so favorably disposed towards Balaram because, well, he taught, Balaram taught Duryodhana how to use a club. And there was a disagreement one time. I'm not sure the chronology on this, but Krishna wanted Arjuna to marry Subhadra, but Balaram wanted Duryodhana to marry Subhadra. Quite a difference of opinion of these two different personalities. That's the nature of spiritual life. Everything's very personal. So they were very favorably disposed. And they greeted Uddhava, who Balaram sent first as, you know, just to test the water. And then they went outside, you know, because Balaram had stayed in a garden, in a little cottage, waiting to see the result. And they went out and just welcomed him very warmly, with great respect. So after exchanging pleasantries of how the different family members in Dwarka are and in Hastinapur, Balaram got down to business, and very succinctly, he said, just to give everyone a little review, King Ugrasena is our master and the ruler of kings. With undivided attention, you should hear what he has ordered you to do, and then you should do it at once. King Ugrasena has said, this is directly from, you know, this is Balaram quoting King Ugrasena, even though by irreligious means, several of you defeated a single opponent who follows the religious code, still I'm tolerating this for the sake of unity among family members. So here Balaram is, you know, this is the message. He's using the Hari Prayana is from India. So, you know, there's a Upekshavad, right? This is where you state things indirectly. It's considered to be of the best etiquette. So Balaram's being a little indirect here. He's not saying, just give him back, you know, let Samba go. But it was obvious that this is what Balaram wanted. So then the Kauravas became really furious, and they spoke in very negative ways. Here's what they said. You know, this was yesterday's last verse. Oh, how amazing this is! The force of time is indeed insurmountable. A lowly shoe now wants to climb on the head that bears the royal crown. So, what an insulting way of dealing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, dealing with the person that he's representing, you know, Ugrasena and all the Yadavas. And then, at least this is on the surface, it seems quite, you know, quite a obnoxious response. And then today, it's because these Vrishnis are bound to us by marital ties that we have granted them equality, allowing them to share a bed, seats, and meals. Indeed, it is we who have given them their royal thrones. Only because we looked the other way could they enjoy the pair of yak tail fans, and a conch shell, white umbrella throne, and royal bed. So, really big put down. And in one sense, it seems quite on the material platform. So let's first analyze it from the standpoint of Leela. Now, first of all, Yayati cursed Yadu that all of his descendants couldn't hold the position of a king. So on this basis, I think we can assume that this is how they're speaking of them as low-class people. Here they are, you know, the Pandavas and the Kauravas are, you know, they're kind of on the emperor level, whereas King Ugrasena is like small time. Maybe he isn't even really considered by them a king, because that's the curse. If we go back, however, I guess this enters a little bit. Okay, so this is more Leela. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and his commentary on text 21, where Balaram saying King Ugrasena is our master and the ruler of kings. With undivided attention, you should hear what he has ordered you to do, and then you should do it at once. So it seems there's an incongruity between the vision that the Kauravas seem to be holding in their heart and what Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is indicating, you know, of the position of Ugrasena. So here's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has to say. You are kings, but Ugrasena is the ruler or king of you. Shita Isha. So this is he's the ruler of the whole world. Why? Because he is master, Prabhu, whose order Indra and others carry out, offering him tribute in the form of the Sudharma Hall in the Parijata tree. Yati forbade the Yadus from being kings, but he did not forbid them from being rulers of kings. You should listen carefully to his order, otherwise he will punish you. So, some insight from the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So, you know, I think what I'll do is kind of, there's a very good summation of the Leela, kind of the internal, like, rasa that is being relished here by these eternal associates of the Lord. And that's summarized nicely by Srila Prabhupada, and this is quoted in the last purport of this chapter. I'm maybe preempting whoever's assigned that verse and purport, but I think it's relevant. And it's really fascinating, you know, the kind of what's really going on behind the scenes on the platform of Rasa. For the most part, it was a practice of the Kshatriya kings to inaugurate some kind of fighting between the parties of the bride and bridegroom before the marriage. When Sambha forcibly took away Lakshmana, the elderly members of the Kuru dynasty were pleased to see that he was actually a suitable match for her. That's not what came out externally, but in order to see his personal strength, however, they fought with him. Without any respect for the regulations of fighting, they all arrested him. When the Yadu dynasty decided to release Sambha from the confinement of the Kurus, Lord Balaram came personally to settle the matter. And as a powerful Kshatriya, he ordered them to free Sambha immediately. The Kauravas became superficially insulted by this order, so they challenged Lord Balaram's power. They simply wanted to see him exhibit his inconceivable strength. Okay? Interesting analysis. Thus, with great pleasure, they handed over their daughter to Sambha, and the whole matter was settled. Duryodhan, being affectionate towards his daughter Lakshmana, had her married to Sambha in great pomp. Balaram was very satisfied after his great reception from the side of the Kurus, and accompanied by the newly married couple, he started toward his capital city of Dwarka. Lord Balaram triumphantly reached Dwarka, where he met with many citizens who were all his devotees and friends. When they all assembled, Lord Balaram narrated the story of the marriage, and they were astonished to see how Balaram had made the city of Hastinapur tremble. By that last sentence, he was pulling the Hastinapur into the Ganges. He dislocated it from its foundation in the earth and was pulling it. Okay, so that's from the standpoint of rasa, kind of what's taking place here. Seemingly contradictory modalities. Seems like there's this ferocious fratricidal mood, and then but underneath is all this love, all these loving exchanges taking place that really are heightening the relationships. Now, from the standpoint of what lessons do we have to learn from these pastimes? One devotee told me of a Sanskrit phrase, lokika samanya upekshna. And this refers to, like, for us kind of neophyte devotees, or for the general people, there's instructions that we can also gain. So this is kind of in the area of the lesson that I'd like to explain. It's as if when Lord Balaram, and he finished speaking, then the reaction of the kurus, the senior kurus, was, who do you think you are? Do you know who I am? It was like that, right? So kind of, has anybody ever had that kind of emotion before? You know, maybe when some kind of conflict has arisen in their life? Anybody ever felt like that? I'm the only one? I can remember when I was like seven, 8 years old, I had a classmate, and he started to wrestle with me. I still remember his name. It was Scott Elder. And I said to him, do you know who I am? Because I was the big bully in my grade, in my class. And he actually beat me up. So I got humbled. So, you know, this is something that from time to time happens within the devotional community. You know, somehow or other, another devotee pushes, as we say in the colloquialism, pushes our buttons. And we respond not in a way that we would consider to be the best way, you know, for a Vaishnava. So there's kind of like lessons that can be drawn from this. Now, this point of, do you know who I am? Who do you think you are? I mean, that's really what takes place. When we lose it, when we lose our composure, we become disturbed, we're forgetting who we are. You know, that we're eternal servants of Krishna. And that forgetfulness also leads us to a disrespectful attitude towards other living entities, to other Vaishnavas. So, you know, I think everyone's gone through this, maybe in the not too distant past. You know, we've had these kind of experiences, maybe with our spouse, maybe with someone we're serving with. You know, there's a variety of different situations that are instructive and, you know, give us an opportunity to really come to terms with our devotional relationship with Krishna. Because you look at it, you know, here we've got the leaders of the kurus, and they're dealing with Lord Balaram. You know, Balaram's representing Ugrasena. You know, and they're putting him down, like, who the heck is this guy? It's, you know, send a message like this to see, you know, these are lowly people. I have no respect whatsoever for them. So, you know, how do we actually, you know, process something like this when it takes place in our own lives, when we act on a level which really isn't appropriate. You know, how to process this and how to process it in such a way that we're less inclined to act this way in the future. Now, what immediately comes to mind is the third shloka of Shishastakam. Chanadapi sunichena toroiva sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya siddhahari. One should consider himself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant to the tree, ready to offer all respect to others, and not expecting any respect in himself. I got that mixed up. Not acting out of false prestige and ready to offer all respects to others, manadena. So there's some interesting points that are made in this regard by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's really a wonderful document where his commentary is entitled Sri Sanmodan Bhashya. And it's really quite remarkable, you know, how he analyzes the humility. He describes, you know, the law, the straw in the street. You know, he's an inanimate object, so he doesn't have this whole expanded false ego. You know, he's the straw in the street. You know, that's it. There's nothing more than that. Whereas in our conditioned state, you know, there's a big exaggeration of what we think we are. You know, it's like, we're not, you know, tiny part and parcels of Krishna when we're under the influence of Ahankara. We've got a lot more there. There's one of my favorite shlokas from the 11th canto, 2nd chapter, 37th shloka, that quite accurately describes this phenomenon. Bhayam dviti yabhi nivesha tashad ishari petasha viparyoshmiti. Tanmaya yato Buddha abhijetan bhaktyayaka yesham guru devatatma. When the living entity becomes attracted by the material energy, he becomes separated in his relationship from Krishna. He becomes illusioned and he starts thinking, instead of that I'm Krishna's servant, I'm Krishna's competitor. There's this completely different relationship. It's a viparyo, like reversal. And so in that condition, when one finally realizes that this is what's going on, then he should take up the process of devotional service with heart and soul. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that when one chants the holy name offenselessly, then automatically the principles that are described in the four qualities that are described in this third verse of the Shishastakam automatically manifest. They're automatically there. One feels great humility. There's a tremendous transformation when this taste from chanting takes place. One becomes detached from his body and his so-called possessions. Starts seeing things very clearly, sees himself as Krishna's service, as his constant reciprocation that takes place when one is chanting purely. And then there's an interesting discussion, it's also in Anchalila, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes how this being more tolerant than a tree, it's not just mantra sparsha stukantaya shatoshna sukha dukada, you know, just tolerate. But it's the, what he describes it as is compassion free from envy. Just like the tree, he provides succulent fruits and shade even to the woodcutter who's trying to cut him down. So there's this deep compassion that someone who's chanting free from offense for others, because he's relishing this deep taste in his relationship with Krishna, and he feels so much compassion for those people that are suffering so intensely, you know, without their relationship and forgetfulness of their relationship with Krishna. This is very nicely expressed by Prahlad Maharaj in his prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev, as he's pacifying Lord Nrisimhadev. Naivodvije para dharatiya vaitaranya stradvirya gayana mahamita magnachita socetato vimokachetasa indriyarta maya sukaya baram udvahato vimudhan. O best of the great personalities, I'm not at all afraid of material existence. For wherever I stay, I'm fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. And this is in, I think it's in chapter 22, Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. And there, Prabhupada translates it, I'm simply absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. I'm just in this ocean of bliss from chanting your holy name. I'm just so in ecstasy. So then, Prahlad Maharaj, then he says, but I am concerned out of love for those fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and for maintaining their families and societies and countries. I'm simply concerned out of love for them. So there's this natural compassion that awakens. Okay, so then this respect, or you know, there's some freedom from false prestige, you know, not wanting to be honored. This also comes, you know, that I'm just a servant of Krishna. I have no business. No matter how much tribute is paid to me, no matter how much honor is given to me, I just maintain this mentality. I'm Krishna's servant. You know, I don't want to acquire all kinds of possessions. I'm just going to use whatever I can in your service, my dear Lord Krishna. And then there's this respect to everyone else because he knows this is Krishna's part and parcel. And this is actually, you know, the Madhyama Vaishnava, he has this mentality. Ishvare tad adineshu balisheshu pusachu cha prema maitri kripo peksha ya karoti sa madhyamaha. So, you know, he offers his love to the Supreme Lord. And this comes through his constantly practicing uttama bhakti, and you know, he makes friendships with other devotees. This is so favorable to the process of devotional service. And in Balishesha Kripa, you know, he's merciful. He has this compassion for those that are innocent and ignorant. And then he neglects those who are envious. But even that's done out of love. Because if he starts preaching to them, then they become offensive and they become more entangled in their suffering material consciousness. Okay, so those are the symptoms, those qualities manifest in someone who's chanting free from offense. But what about the rest of us? You know, how do we get there? So this cultivation of these different moods also are supportive of coming to the platform of Shuddhanam. We can cultivate these moods. We're always thinking, just like Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, he says that regarding Chinara Pisuni Chena Turoiva Sahishuna, that we should string it on the thread of the holy name and wear it around our neck for constant remembrance. So this, you know, this sambandha gyan, you know, just to always remember our position. And this is, of course, very much fortified by studying Prabhupada's books. Without sambandha gyan, one can't come to the platform of offenseless chanting. It's actually required. You just can't do it. This is the position of the acharyas. Harinam Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Harinam Chintamani. And then this whole platform of yukta vairagya, so necessary. We may not be on the liberated platform. We may not be chanting offenselessly, but at least we can try to use everything in Krishna's service, not fall prey to sense gratification. And this sets the stage, you know, for the clarity of consciousness to chant very sincerely. It's very, very difficult to chant if we're engaging in sense gratification. And then just scrupulously avoid offending devotees. And if we make offense, then you have to do the needful, beg for forgiveness, and try very hard not to do it again. Okay, so I'll stop here, and I'll just read the two translations again. It is because these Vrishnis are bound to us by marital ties that we have granted them equality, allowing them to share our beds, seats, and meals. Indeed, it is we who have given them their royal thrones. Only because we look the other way could they enjoy the pair of yak tail fans and the conch shell, white umbrella throne, and royal bed. Are there any questions or comments? Shivakram Prabhu.
Within the Varnashram system, it seems like they usually have like the topmost king there, and you have also subordinate kings. So it seems like the Vrishnis, they were within that category. They were subordinate to the Kurus. And it seems that's why they were speaking like that. But of course, I mean, we have to remember that Krishna was there and Balaram was there, who are the supreme personality of Godhead. So to still adopt that kind of a position was really offensive. But I mean, if you take it on the Varnashram situation, then it looked like from that platform they were saying that these guys are subordinate to us and they should not act like that. What's your thought?
Yeah, and Baladev Vidyabhushan's commentary and Bhagavad Gita 11:42, and this is just after Arjuna's been dazzled by Krishna's universal form, and then he says he's regretful that he's referred to him as Shaka, my friend, Krishna, without saying Sri Krishna, and Yadava. Because, you know, and then in the commentary, you know, I've sat in the same seat with you, I've in the same bed with you, we've eaten together. Now I realize, you know, there's this whole opulence, you know, that's just like, wow, you know, where have I gone? You know, that, you know, so then Baladev Vidyabhushan, he says that the Kauravas and the Pandavas, they're on the level of emperors, whereas the Yadus are like smaller kings. But then you get this other understanding that I read, you know, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on the text 21 of this chapter, about actually, the Yayati may have cursed them not to be kings, but doesn't mean they can't be rulers of kings. So it's obvious, you know, that this is kind of, well, it might be Varnashram, but devotional service is transcendental to Varnashram. Right? I mean, I guess we could say that in this context. You know, there's a higher platform of understanding. Just like Haridas Thakur, you know, he was born in a Mohammedan family. So how could he be the Acharya of the holy name? You know, but because he was extremely qualified by Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So it's a superior kind of categorization, you know, the devotional qualification. And this is also what we follow within our movement. You know, we're not smarta Brahmins.
Yeah, I was just trying to put ourselves in their shoes, in the sense that Bhagavad Gita has not been spoken as yet, you know, and all that Bhagavad Dharma and stuff had seems to be falling apart, right? Because later on when the Mahabharata would take place, then Krishna would speak Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. But that would be later on, not at this point.
So I don't quite get your point.
No, well, what I'm saying, like the Dharma of Bhagavad Gita, you know, or the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, had seemed to be lost at this point.
Hmm.
You know, so like what you were talking in the point of, you know, like on a devotional platform, devotional side. So they were strictly operating more on the Varnashram level rather than, you know, on a higher platform.
I guess, but still and all, there seemed to be recognition that he was the Supreme Personality of God. I think that's mentioned in earlier texts. You know, the Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana saw Balaram in that regard. But then because of their offense, they just lost it. You know, they were completely covered by that. But then, from the standpoint of rasa, this was a superficial, they were superficially insulted. But then they went ahead and blasted Balaram because they wanted to see his achincha shakti. They wanted to see his inconceivable powers. And they weren't really upset with Samba. They were pleased that he was so qualified and was a qualified husband for their daughter. So there's the external and then there's the internal. You know, and many of these elements, you know, in the past tense. Kunda Prabhu. Okay. Anything else? Karungi, got any questions or comments? No? You got it all figured out? All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.